So it's batch number 7 now. It's Tim and Liz, and we've got some news stories coming up for you. We're going to do the headlines first, and then we've got quizzes, Liz. Leslie's quiz. The one and only quiz with Liz. We get there in the end, don't we? And we've got those questions coming up for you. So my headlines are: crime in Newcastle Town Centre down with better CCTV and afternoon patrols, and Stoke-on-Trent Coroner's Court moves to cost taxpayers £609,000. And Liz's stories coming up are:
25 years ago when Shelton Bar shut for good after 160 years, and parents' anguish as fighter Rosie Five struck down with brain tumour.
And now it's time for the one and only quiz with Liz questions. Off you go.
Number one, the Glorious Revolution of 1688 brought which king to the English throne? Number two, in which US city is the headquarters of the United Nations? Number three, what is the main river that runs through Dublin? Number four, sargassum and kelp are types of what? Number five, which metallic element is also known as quicksilver? Number six, which Hollywood actress was married to Humphrey Bogart from 1945 to 1957? Number seven, what is the name given to the sultry summer days that usually follow the rising of the star system Sirius? Number eight, who claimed that the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton? Number nine, what name was attached to the Irish-born American cook and disease carrier Mary Malone? Number 10. Which Wagner opera is based on the legend of a ghost ship never able to make port but doomed to sail the sea forever? And my bonus, in the nursery rhyme Oranges and Lemons, what do the bells of Old Bailey say?
Well, have a little ponder on all those questions, and we will give you the answers coming up a little bit later on. Okay, so I'm going to read the first news story for you, and then we'll have one from Liz. And this is: crime in Newcastle Town Centre is down with better CCTV and afternoon patrols. A council says they have a very tight grip on crime and antisocial behaviour now in Newcastle underlying Town Centre after the latest figures have showed a fall in incidents. Community safety campaigns, such as the police-led Safer Night scheme at the weekends and Safe Space for Women and Girls, as well as increased CCTV presence and dedicated antisocial behaviour patrols between 2 and 5pm, have actually been credited with making a significant impact. The Borough Council's collaborative approach with Staffordshire Police and other partners, overseen via the Newcastle Community Safety Partnership Scheme, has resulted in reported crime reduced by 11.1% and antisocial behaviour falling for a second time by an additional 8.2% between February 2023 to 2024 and February 2024 to 2025. The latest police figures also show a decline in business burglaries and theft, and serious violence rose marginally by 0.7%, while the theft of motor vehicles was the one crime which saw a surge in incidents with an 11% annual rise. Councillor Gail Heesam, who is Cabinet Member for Community Safety and Wellbeing, said the Council, Staffordshire Police and other agencies have a significant focus and presence in Newcastle Town Centre as part of work to keep communities safe across Newcastle Underlying. Together, we have a very tight grip on crime and antisocial behaviour, and as our work progresses to tackle these issues, it's great to see that our tactics are having a positive impact on the look and feel of the town centre for everyone who visits Newcastle is a vibrant market town with a bustling nighttime economy. Its community safety issues are certainly not unique, but they can have a negative impact on overall perceptions of the area, and we obviously want to limit this as much as possible. Council leader Simon Tagg added the new figures are really encouraging and show that the council and its partners are making a visible difference to the town centre experience. The council is working really hard to make the area more vibrant and successful, and the foundation of that is creating the conditions where it's safe, welcoming and friendly as possible for everybody, including visitors and businesses. It was great to promote this excellent work during the recent launch of our new Civic Pride campaign. The idea is to make a positive difference by creating a sense of pride across the borough and calling on residents to help play their part. So over to Liz, who's going to do the next story for us in Batch 6.
25 years ago, when Shelton Bar shut for good after 160 years, when around 2,000 workers were made redundant from the Shelton Bar Ironworks in 1978, many saw it as the death knell for the once industrial powerhouse of the Potteries. However, life continued at the Etruria factory for more than two decades after that momentous downturn in fortunes. The fiery red glow which emanated from the ironworks at Shelton Bar was said to have inspired parts of H.G. Wells' seminal novel The War of the Worlds during a short stay in the Potteries. The impact of this icon of North Staffordshire's industrial heritage can be felt today for perhaps different reasons. The closure of the site on the 27th of April 2000 led to the loss of jobs for the remaining 300 workers, bringing the curtain down on a business that had sustained generations of the region's workforce, becoming part of the fabric of communities over its near 160-year lifespan. Shelton Coal and Ironworks was opened by the Earl of Granville in 1841, producing pig iron by smelting down locally sourced ironstone, which in turn was made into wrought iron. The ironworks developed a demand for its produce and quickly began to grow, expanding upon the Etruria site it would call home for more than a century. By the 1950s, the country's ironworks had been nationalised, including the operation at Shelton Bar. This was to last for only 5 years, until 1956 though. In 1967, the Iron and Steel Act saw the industry renationalised. Along with 13 of the nation's biggest steelworks, Shelton Bar became part of an operation that supplied 90% of the UK's steel output. Following the 2000 closure, the final building at Shelton Bar Steelworks was torn down in 2005. As one of the major employers in the region, Shelton Bar became, to the local population, something more than just a place to work. It was a badge of honour to say you were employed there, and its eventual loss cost more than the end of the business. It was so ingrained into the fabric of the Potteries that families and communities were economically and socially torn apart. Speaking to The Way We Were in 2014, Raymond Brammer, a former errand boy at Shelton Bar, recalled his own and his family's experiences working there. He said, "My mum got me my first job on Shelton Bar as an errand boy. I didn't have any choice in the matter. By the time I left school at Easter, my mum had already set me up with the job. I didn't give it much thought, it was just a job, and I started on £3 a week, which I felt was a good wage at the time. The job involved running messages between the different departments, and I did that for about 12 months or so. There were women in the office, but not on the factory floor. It could be a very demanding job. They would often have to wheel the bags of slag onto the waiting railway vans, especially if some of the men were off work."
So many thanks for that. So my next story now is Stoke-on-Trent Coroner's Court is to move, and it's going to cost taxpayers £609,000. Inquests will soon move to a new venue in Stoke-on-Trent in a £609,000 £1,450 project to remove distress for grieving families. Since 2010, inquests have been held at Stoke Town Hall following the closure of the old Coroner's Court building in Hartsill. But this arrangement is no longer fit for purpose due to the noise from other meetings and events at the Town Hall. Assurances were previously given that they would only be minimal footfall near the rooms used by the coroner's service. These issues have resulted in some inquests being held at county buildings in Stafford, incurring additional costs. Councillors have now been given final approval to move to Swan House in Stoke, with the first floor of the City Council-owned building set to be converted for the new use. This work is expected to be completed by the end of the year, and the coroner service will initially move into the ground floor of Swan House on an interim basis. Staffordshire County Council will contribute £140,000 towards the cost of the move, while Stoke-on-Trent City Council will cover the remaining £469,450 through borrowing. The two authorities jointly fund the coroner service. A report to the Joint Coroner's Committee states there is a shared consensus that the use of Stoke Town Hall cannot be deconflicted sufficiently to enable an efficient coroner's service to run there. It should be noted that the proposal to relocate the coroner is not predicated on making a saving or a definable payback period. It is based on operational necessity and will enable an efficient and effective court service, remove distress for grieving families, and reduce reputational risk for both councils. Including interest payments, the total cost to the City Council over the 33 life of the facility will be £938,000, but the report adds that the relocation will protect lettings income for the Town Hall and could support increased lettings at the King Hall next door. So over to Liz now, who's going to do the next and final story for us in Batch 7, by the way, not Batch 6.
Parents anguish as fighter Rosie, 5, struck down with brain tumour. The parents of a 5-year-old girl with an ultra-rare brain tumour, making up less than 1% of diagnoses, hope she will prove doctors wrong and outlive her 12-month prognosis. Charlotte and Stephen Hassel, both 36, from Cheshire, described their daughter Rosie as a little firecracker who has always been bubbly. When in November 2024 she started experiencing extreme headaches and issues where her eyes pinged in the wrong direction. Concerned NHS worker Charlotte and Tesco employee Stephen took Rosie to see both a doctor and an optician, but nothing wrong could be found and it was thought she could have migraines, which run in the family. After Rosie's head pains worsened to the point it was too painful for her to cry and she could not laugh or sneeze, the family sought another eye test where suspected nerve damage was detected in Rosie's left eye. And after attending an out-of-hours doctor appointment, she was referred for an MRI scan. 3 days before Christmas, Rosie was diagnosed with a brain tumour the size of a kiwi, and after a biopsy, the couple were told it was cancerous, inoperable, and incredibly aggressive, with doctors estimating it had grown within a matter of days or weeks. The family were also informed the average prognosis for Rosie's type of cancer is 9 to 12 months, but her condition is so rare they are not certain, so the family hopes speaking publicly will raise awareness to help others in the future. Rosie is a fighter. We can see how much she has fought since she's had this, and I'm hoping that she proves them wrong and they can learn from her, Charlotte said. She will be the one that gets through it, but you never know, and if she's not, we can help other families down the line with what we're going through. Rosie started experiencing pains in her head and strange eye issues in November 2024. We didn't think anything of it at first, but over the next few days the pain got worse, Charlotte said. We were having tea one night and she said she'd learnt to go cross-eyed, but her left eye actually pinged the other way. That's when we realised something had happened. Charlotte took Rosie for a doctor's appointment where it was thought she could be experiencing migraines, a condition which runs on both sides of the family. She also visited an optician's, Vision Express, but a reason for Rosie's symptoms could not be found, as both her eye and vision were working as normal. Rosie then started to become really unwell, and the family took her to Leighton Hospital in Crewe, where she was prescribed with antibiotics after doctors found white spots on her throat. But, Charlotte said, she never really picked up from there. She had 27 episodes of this pain in her head, and the doctors were a little bit stumped about what it could be. She said, adding they were also advised to give Rosie Calpol to help with the pain. She was just so poorly, rolling about in pain on the floor. She was really uncomfortable and really quite stressed out. She tried to cry, but it was so painful. She couldn't laugh or sneeze because it hurt. After seeking a second eye test from Specsavers, where Charlotte said her daughter's symptoms had become a lot worse, it was thought Rosie had suspected nerve damage in her left eye, and she was referred to an ophthalmologist. Rosie underwent thorough tests before being sent for an MRI scan at Leighton Hospital on December the 19th. The family received the results of the scan on the 22nd of December, which revealed a 6-centimetre tumour in her brain. "Everything just stops, everything goes quiet," Charlotte said. "I argued with them at the time and said they're wrong because they've only done one scan. They can't surely be right off one scan." The same day, Rosie underwent an MRI scan with contrast, where a dye is injected to make certain tissues and blood vessels show up more clearly, before the family were referred to Alder Hey Children's Hospital in Liverpool and the presence of the tumour was confirmed. The family were able to return home for Christmas Day, but they needed to be back at the hospital by Boxing Day for Rosie to undergo a biopsy on the 27th of December. On the 26th of January, the family received Rosie's official diagnosis, which was a new entity of paediatric bithalamic glioma. Bithalamic gliomas are incredibly rare tumours which make up less than 1% of brain tumour diagnoses, according to brain tumour research. "We were told from the start it was inoperable because of where the tumour sits. We told it was a very aggressive tumour," Stefan said. Charlotte added, "They said it was literally a matter of days or weeks that it could have happened and grown quite quickly because the symptoms just came on. Even though she has a paediatric bithalamic glioma, it's a new entity. It's a very rare form of cancer that she's got. When you Google it, there's not much you can find." Rosie will continue to have chemotherapy treatment after previously undergoing radiotherapy, and she will have scans every 3 months to monitor the growth of the tumour. The family were informed the average prognosis for bithalamic gliomas is between 9 and 12 months, but they remain positive as they know Rosie is a fighter. "Rosie is incredible and she just tried to carry on as much as she can. She's such a tough cookie," Charlotte said. They hope by sharing Rosie's journey, others will benefit from further research and information in future. "If anyone knows anything more about her cancer, we can learn from it and help other families as well," Charlotte said. The family have launched a GoFundMe page for support, as Charlotte and Stefan have taken time off work to care for Rosie and help her enjoy the days she has away from hospital, raising over £33,000.